Again, the topic for today is the training of the mind.
Friends, the training of the mind is a practical application of a complete system of psychology or knowledge of the soul. This training relies upon knowledge of the sevenfold nature of the human being, the sevenfold nature of the cosmos, and the relationship between the two. The aim of this training is the development of the higher mental faculties and their attuning with universal principles. The purpose of this training is to be better able to help the evolution of humanity through self-sacrificing and altruistic service and pursue the path of spiritual evolution of the immortal individual soul. The psychology of the training of the mind is built on a foundation of three concepts: self, ego, and mind. There are methods of training the mind based on systems of psychology that limit the concept of self to the personal self, the concept of the ego to the personal ego, and the concept of mind to the lower mind, working through the instrument of the physical brain. The natural results of these methods is improvement of the lower mental and intellectual faculties alone, which are limited in scope. The motivation of this mental training is in the service of the personal self and is essentially self-centered. The benefits sought after by these other systems of mental training are for the improvement of the stature and potency of the personality. They will not train or develop the use of the higher mental faculties for the self-sacrificing and altruistic service of humanity, nor will they benefit the spiritual evolution of the immortal individual soul. The concepts of self, ego, and mind in the light of theosophy are clarified by H.P. Blavatsky in The Key to Theosophy, pages 174 to 176, in the section called Definite Words for Definite Things. In the boundless and fathomless depths of undifferentiated spirit, there is only one self of all, which is the one universal and absolute reality. Although there is in reality only one self, within the human being, there appear to be two selves, one spiritual and the other material. The spiritual self, or higher self, is an inseparable way of the one absolute self and is eternal and universal. It is our real self. Although unknowable in essence, it wells up in human waking consciousness as awareness of I am. I am I. It may be called the individual self or the individual identity. The material self or lower self is the idea of personal self or personal identity. It is formed from self-identification with the physical characteristics of the body, the instincts, the passions and desires. It wells up in waking human consciousness as awareness of personal self or identity, or I, having distinct qualities. In other words, we think of ourselves as a certain person with a certain name from a certain family, with certain abilities, certain weaknesses, certain occupation, certain friends, certain families. It is our changeable and impermanent self or identity. The second idea, the term ego, refers to self, but as an entity or being. And in the human being, there appear to be two beings, a spiritual and a material ego. The spiritual, higher divine ego is called the individuality, which is the permanent spiritual being evolving through a long series of incarnations. It is self-conscious awareness of self as being the same unchanging perceiver, knower, experiencer of all the changing temporary experiences within and without the personality through a lifetime. So when we think of ourselves as the observer, the experiencer, the witness, we are the same being, the same individual being, observer, witness, that we were when we were a child or a teenager or a young adult or so forth. And even though we were the same individual being, we witnessed many changes of our personality. And it is the material or personal ego we call the personality. It wells up as self-conscious awareness of oneself as being a being with definite physical qualities, desires, personalities, feelings, and relationships. And like our personal identity, the personality is changeable and temporary, exists only for a lifetime. So not only do we think of ourselves as a person, but other people think of us as a person. So if we mention a name, there comes to our mind a definite person, and we associate with that person all sorts of visible and knowable and recognizable physical, psychological, emotional traits. But this is really the personality, the mask of the inner real being, the individuality. The sevenfold theosophical classification of the human being recognizes a temporary and a mortal aspect of human nature, as well as an enduring and immortal aspect. The former is called the lower quaternary because it consists of four principles: the physical body, the astral body, the life principle, and the desire principle. This is what makes up our personality. The latter is called the upper imperishable triad. It is a unity of mind or manas, spiritual soul or buddhi, and spirit, atma. This trinity, this triad, makes up our immortal individuality. In any one incarnation, the personality is the temporary, the mortal vehicle of the individuality, the mask, if you will. And mind is the link between Atma Buddhi on the one hand and lower mortal human being or personality on the other. So mind is the third concept that we have to grasp before we consider its training. Mind is the mental faculty of thinking, but it is also the principle that endows the human being with the light of self-consciousness and moral intelligence to know and choose a path of thought and action which is higher or lower. better or dearer, right and truthful, or lower and deceitful. Mind is also the immortal thinker, the individuality that incarnates from life to life. So we are mind beings. When the mind being incarnates, it becomes dual in potentiality. It has a lower and a higher aspect. When thinking through the influence and impressions of the physical body and brain, senses and passions and desires, we call it lower mind or lower manas. When influenced, illuminated, or consciously united with the principle of spiritual soul, buddhi, it is called higher mind or higher manas. Then its discerning intelligence is spiritual, which manifests as intuition, wisdom, and the clear perception of the enduring reality of things as opposed to their transitory, temporary experience and appearance. Explaining what happens during the incarnation of the mind being, HPB writes in the Key to Theosophy, but once imprisoned or incarnate, their essence, these mind beings, become dual. That is to say, the rays of the eternal divine mind, considered as individual entities, assume a twofold attribute, which is their essential. A, the first is their essential inherent characteristic, heaven-inspiring higher mind, and B, the human quality of thinking or animal cogitation, rationalized owing to the superiority of the human brain, the kamatending or lower manas. One gravitates towards buddhi, the other tending downward to the seat of passions and animal desires. In a complete system of training of the mind, in the light of theosophy, it is the lower mind that needs to be trained and made invulnerable to the influence of the personal desires and passions, as well as the illusionary personal idea of a separate self, because these are the cause of all suffering and wrongdoing. The mind also needs to be trained and self-consciously united with Atma Buddhi, its spiritual nature, so that it may become a faithful instrument of the light, power, and wisdom of spiritual knowledge. It is the selfishness of the lower personality, the ego, the lower ego, that has to be eradicated so that we become the faithful instrument of the immortal individuality. It is the personal idea of separateness, a separate self from other selves, that needs to be forgotten and replaced by an enduring awareness of the individual higher self, an inseparable way of the inseparable ray of the one self of each and all. It is the path of renunciation of self-interest that leads to greatness of soul wisdom, power, and compassion. Now, all training, whether physical or mental, requires a clear idea of the end in view, as well as reasonable goals that are achievable. Considering all that has been stated before, there are two reasonable, clear, achievable, and practical goals that all human beings are capable of achieving at this time if they try. They are stability of insight, which results in peace of mind, And the error is stability of intellect, which results in clarity of mind. So we think that peace of mind and clarity of mind are two worthwhile goals we can all try to achieve through our training of our minds. So there is a peace of mind that arises from a stability of insight, of the permanence of our individual self, I am I, of the individual, of the inner individuality who is the enduring witness of all temporary experience. In other words, awareness that we are the observer of the conditions. Of one's true nature as an immortal thinking spiritual being incarnating through many lives. With that stability of insight into self-knowledge, there follows an intuitive grasp of higher ideals and aspirations which are in harmony with that spiritual knowledge of our true self, our true being, and the true nature of our mind. And this higher intuitive grasp will be a great help in the choices we make in our everyday goals and actions. The activity of the lower mind, especially its innate tendency to be attracted to pleasant and unpleasant memories, is an obstacle to stability of insight. Stability of awareness. However, it can be trained by persistent practice to be concentrated on our awareness of our higher self, our higher ego, and our higher mind. The greatest obstacle to stability of insight is the dominating influence of our passions and desires. Stability of insight. This higher spiritual awareness is achieved by training the mind to be free from the bonds of desire for personal reward and satisfaction from our actions, gratification only for our lower personal self, our personalities, and the gratification of our lower mind. Whatever desire enters one's heart, it should be in such a way that it will not disturb the peace of mind that results from our uninterrupted insight into the fact that the true source of peace is within ourselves and does not depend on the gratification of desire for objects outside of oneself. True happiness, contentment, bliss, if you will, always comes from within through spiritual knowledge. The second goal of training we can all try to achieve, as we said, is stability of intellect. So, if stability of insight is persistent awareness of spiritual truths, stability of intellect is the undisturbed ability to use all the faculties of our lower mind, thought, will, feeling, imagination, and memory, in the service of our higher mind, in the service of ourselves as a mortal thinking being. And to use the mind with its intuitive grasp of spiritual truths regarding the higher nature of self and ego. So it's training the lower mind to have ability to be constantly using its faculties in that direction. But the greatest obstacle to achieving this stability of intellect, this stability of how to use our minds in the service of the higher, are the physical senses. Our sensations. Now, the physical senses are necessary for experience of the physical world. Without the senses, There would be no opportunity or means to learn through the contrast of pleasure and pain, light and dark, heat and cold, and all the other dualities of physical existence. However, instability of intellect and misuse of the lower mental faculties are instigated by sensations. And being unstable, they result in ignorance, illusion, delusion, and misperception of the reality of our observed experience. It is also sensation and the memory of pleasant and unpleasant sensations that arouse our passions and desires and excite the instinctive activity of the lower mind, which disturbs its stability of insight as well as its stability of intellect. Achieving the ability to control the disruptive influence of sensations is an important part of our training of the mind and cannot be overlooked. Training the mind to gain stability of insight and stability of intellect, peace of mind, and clarity of mind is necessary for the lower mind to access the storehouse and potency of spiritual wisdom, soul memory, and spiritual faculties within the higher ego, the immortal ego, the higher mind. However, this stability of intellect cannot be satisfactorily, completely, or lastingly achieved by external measures such as rituals, fasts, ascetic practices. The passions and sensory impressions still have their hold and influence on the lower mind, which still craves their experience. The stability of intellect, the stability of insight must come from within. It is the personality and the personal self-idea that ourselves as thinking of ourselves as I am this person separate from other persons or acting, believing that we are this limited person, this limited personality. It is that idea that develops a concern and passion with the tastes of pleasurable experience brought on by the pleasurable sensation of objects of sense. So we experience a pleasurable sensation, but it is our personal idea, our personality, which craves the taste, the continued experience of that pleasurable sensation, and is there bound down thereby. Freedom from these bonds of passion and the resulting anxiety, fear, and anger are only achieved by one who is acquainted with their higher self, the I am I, the higher ego, the observer, the experiencer, and the higher mind, themselves as immortal thinkers through many lives. This acquaintance with the Supreme is realized by a lifetime and daily exercise of meditation, or turning of the lower mind through the sustained consideration of these ideas and facts of our inner nature. We are an observer. We are that individual identity, I am. And we are that immortal thinker. The lower mind, by constantly dwelling that on those things, eventually becomes like unto that which it dwells upon. The consciousness of the lower mind becomes permeated with the influence of the supreme knowledge, just as a clear glass vessel takes on the appearance of the color of the fluid it contains. We heard today from the voice of the silence, before the soul can hear, the image man has to become as deaf to the roaring as to whispers, to the cries of bellowing elephants, as to the silvery buzzing of the golden firefly. Before the soul can comprehend and remember, she must unto the silent speaker be united, just as the form to which the clay is modeled is first united with the potter's mind. For then the soul will hear, and will remember. The famous American poet Robert Frost wrote in his most famous poem, The Road Not Taken, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Every moment of our waking life is a moment of choice between what is better for the higher self, the higher ego, the higher mind, or dearer for the lower personal self, the personality, our lower mind, bound to desire and passion. So many little choices by the exercise of free will develop a character, a path, and a destiny. Most people at this time of human evolution, when desire is still the predominating human principle and the concerns of the personality are primary, choose the path of the dearer. But the path less traveled by the few is the path of the better. Even though it is available and attainable to all, the exercise of that daily and hourly better choice is in itself a training of the mind. And traveling that path will make all the difference. So we'd like to stop here and open the meeting up to your questions and comments on this immense subject, of which we've only really been able to touch the surface of the training of the mind. Yes, MDW.
Yes, you made reference to ritual, you know, that we become embedded in ritual, but don't we structure our life around ritual? You know, that even coming to these classes is a ritual. And I would imagine, therefore, that it's the quality of the ritual that is the difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, the rituals referred to here are rituals, the purpose of which are to liberate the mind from the senses. So these might be rituals of asceticism, rituals of self-flagellation, rituals of isolation from other people, rituals of fasting, and other avoidances of experience with the physical senses, that kind of asceticism. Now, the ritualism you're speaking of are duties. That we structure our life around, which have a specific meaning and purpose, and if approached from the right motive, are very helpful to the evolution and training of mind and the evolution of ourselves as spiritual beings. But the point is, and Krishna brings this out in the Bhagavad Gita, where he speaks of false pietists, of the bewildered soul, even though we isolate ourselves from these outer sensation, these outer sources, we still can crave and hold on to within the mind, the experience. And so we still brood about it, we still think about it, we still crave it, even though we're not experiencing it physically. So there has to be a renunciation, a letting go, and rituals, any outer observance cannot do it. It has to be accomplished by a certain training of the mind from within. Yes, ULT.
Yes. So, where does the brain come in? Is the brain and the mind, are they the same thing? Can they be interchangeable or are they different?
We spoke of the dual nature of the mind once that mind being incarnates, a higher and a lower mind. It is the lower mind that needs to use the brain as an instrument, not only to remember and to reason from premise to conclusion, and to gain access to the external physical world and interact with that physical world. So the lower mind is intimately connected with the physical brain, which is its instrument. And most of the functions of that lower mind are dependent and on the physical brain, and cannot function without a healthy, normal physical brain. But the higher mind and our higher faculties as mind beings do not depend on the physical brain, can function independently of the brain. As those who have experienced out-of-body experiences during either near-death experiences or on the operating table under general anesthesia, when the brain is made inactive, would testify.
Follow
Yes,
up.
follow up, ULT.
So, if one has some kind of brain damage or some kind of defect, does that affect the mind? Can one still operate on a certain intuitive level? And where does the observer come in? We've heard in classes about the observer. How does it all tie in together?
Yes. So, what do we mean by the observer? And as we said, we are aware of ourselves being observers as individual observing beings. We can observe what's going on around us. And that power, that fact of ourselves being observers, does not change throughout all the conditions of the body, all the years of our lives. We are still the same individuality. And we call that the higher ego. So it is our reality as spiritual beings, the same spiritual being, the same observer, the same witness throughout many lives, experiencing through many different bodies and personalities, that constitutes that observer. And the functioning of the observer does not depend entirely on the physical brain. Now, for the observer to function on this plane, we need an active, waking brain. For example, we know in the waking state, we can observe what's going on around us physically. But when we are in the dream state, we still are the same observer observing the dream and all the experiences of dream. But during that state, we are not aware as observers what is going on the physical plane because the brain is asleep at that time. So the brain is a necessary instrument for the observer, the witness on this plane. And so we need to take care of it, and it's good for us to have a healthy, normal brain. But if our brain is not healthy, and depending on the extent to which it's damaged, we still don't cease to exist as observers. We're still aware, but we cannot function completely on this plane as we would like to. So take the example for one who is going through amnesia, what we call retrograde amnesia. They have some type of trauma. Now, this person cannot remember anything that happened to them, cannot remember who they were, where they live, what their previous experience, cannot remember anything that led up to the time of the accident. And yet, they still are aware of themselves as being I. They still can think I am, or I am aware. They still are aware of themselves as knowers, they're perceivers. They'll just say, I just don't remember. Can't recall. So the perceiver is still there, but its function on this plane is limited temporarily by the brain. Now we have a chat. Can Raja Yoga meditation techniques be used to train the mind spiritually? So we spoke in the talk in a general way of two kinds of training of the mind, gaining stability of our insight, constant awareness of our higher nature, and stability of intellect, the ability to use our lower mind in the service of the higher. And this is all accomplished by the practice of concentration or one-pointedness and meditation to quiet the rambling of the lower mind and to help the mind focus on the higher. And that is the essence of Raja Yoga training. Raja Yoga training is the training of the mind, the higher mind, the spiritual aspect of our nature, not the lower personal, psychic, or physical part of our nature. We have a follow-up or another chat. Is insight or lack thereof a part of the personality and lower mind? How about empathy? If considered ideals, are they higher mind, the practice of these ideals? So, insight or awareness, what does the word insight mean? It means to be able to look into and gain an understanding of the truth of a certain situation. Now we can call it intuition, if you will, but in order for us to have that stability of intuition, we have to over and therefore have peace of mind, we have to have a certain degree of training. So the insight is the activity of our higher mind, the clear perception of truth, the buddhi faculty, spiritual intuition, spiritual discernment, and the lower mind has to be trained so as not to get in the way. So the lack of it has to do with the untrained lower mind. Same way with empathy. What is empathy? Empathy is the ability to directly identify with the individual. Now, that empathy can be higher or lower. It can be based on personality or it can be based on spiritual understanding. So if it's of the lower, it's really of the lower mind. And what might that be? Well, we come across somebody who is really confused about a math problem, are really not sure to what to do in a marriage or a relationship or work. And having been through that situations as persons, having gone through that tr the training of our minds, our lower mind in mathematics, we have a certain ability and we can empathize with their difficulty. But the kind of empathy that's a higher is ready recognizing ourselves to be one with that soul, that we are all souls in evolution. And as souls, we are all individual perceivers, and we all feel that same feeling of individual self, of I, welling up in our nature. So we can all relate on that. We can relate on the set. We can empathize on the basis of our spiritual unity as I, of our being souls in evolution, and our being perceivers. If that's the basis of our identification, our empathy, then it's through the higher. If lacking, okay. So if lacking from organic symptoms, disease such as mental illness, can it be trained in a present incarnation? And of course, it would depend on the severity and nature of the mental illness and the skills and insight of the therapist, as any kind of illness. These are karmic, and to a certain extent, depending on the karmic nature, they may last a whole lifetime, or they may be overcome to a definite degree by the efforts, the will of the inner perceiver, the knower, the thinker. Now, even though we may not be able to completely overcome the limitations of the mental illness or the physical illness or any kind of limitation in this life, the opportunity for further advancement and development may come about and will come about in a future life. And when we think about it, most human beings are subject to some kind of illusion. The illusion of separateness, not being aware, having wrong ideas about themselves. HPB says we have to remind ourselves that we are continuously self-deceived. So we all, in a sense, have a limitation, a restriction on our mental abilities until we, in this life or at this time, because of the way we've used the mind in the past. And we also have bodily limitations, which prevent the full exercise of our powers. And that's the importance of mental training, to realize even though we have these temporary difficulties, as immortal thinkers, as spiritual beings, there is no end to our possibility of growth and development of power. And it is that realization that gives us peace of mind, of inner contentment, in spite of all the difficulties we have to go through and all the chaos, disorder we see around us in the world. Most of the chats right now. So, okay, we have MDW. On mute.
Then the point being is that the only reality is the present moment. There's nothing other than this moment. So by training the mind, we are able to use this moment more effectively.
Well, let's look at that. If the only reality is the present moment, there has to be another reality, the observer who perceives that moment. For as long as there is that moment that we can be aware of it, there has to be the knower of it. So where do we place our observation, our knowing, our experience? The training is to try to place it in the present moment, meaning in the performance of the duty that lies before us, in the performance of being helpful to others, in the performance of trying to bring out the highest ideals we carry within ourselves and manifest them objectively in the world. And to do that now, whatever we've done in the past, well, that's the past. Whatever we will do in the future, well, we'll see. But what we do now, as we said, the choices we make now will create the character, the destiny, the path that we will find ourselves on in the future. And where we are now is the result of the choices we've made in the past that have brought us into this life, this destiny, with a certain character and a certain path. And that varies for each and all of us. ULT, you had your hand up too, we thought. No, can pass. Okay. So, oh yes, MDW, woman.
Well, that only, you know, we talk about, well, I'm self-conscious or I'm able to reflect, but what is this consciousness? Is that the perceiver?
The consciousness, is that the perceiver?
Yes.
Well, consciousness, we might say, is the welling up of spirit in a form. And all beings, all forms of life are conscious in their own degree. Now, when consciousness wells up in our nature, it can well up in us as direct intuition, direct awareness of the truth of things, or it can well up in our minds as self-conscious identity of I am I am a thinker, I am knower, I know I'm myself and not another being. Or it can well up, as we said, in the consciousness of our, that we are personalities, if it's working through the lower mind. So consciousness is a universal principle, but it wells up depending on the degree of substance and the form it's working through. So as thinkers, as knowers, experiencers, we will always be conscious, but that awareness will depend on the condition. And incidentally, that's what we're studying now, the after-death states, which we might say are after-death states of consciousness for the immortal ego. What we go through or what we experience or what we are conscious of in those after-death states under law, and how that is similar and how that is different from the consciousness we have in this waking state as personalities, as physical beings. So we just want to conclude here briefly with this idea that we only have touched the surface. This is our preliminary training. What distinguishes where we are from the higher disciple or the adept is the ability to train our minds to such a degree that we can learn that universal brotherhood is a fact in nature, that everything that we're made up of goes into the makeup of the universe around us. And if we are sevenfold, then the universe is sevenfold. And the ability of our minds to see directly and know what is going on those higher cosmic planes, just as human beings, we can become aware of our own individual principles. That's the ideal, that's the path before us, but we have to begin where we are. So at this point, we'd like to thank you all, and we look forward to seeing you on Wednesday when we take up for consideration then those after-death states. Our meeting is adjourned.